a lot of people maybe don't know, but like the way that the design team at Snap works is like basically every week you are asked to come with two or three new ideas that you're showing to Evan. Once you got into the swing of it, it was just the best way of learning how to tell stories, stories about products, stories about opportunities. Like, oh yeah, transcription and voice notes. Like, ah, maybe we'll add it to the roadmap. Like, we'll work on it in a year. It's just like how good of a pitch you were able to make to the design team and to Evan and to the engineering team would make the difference as to whether or not they would start working on it next week.
Welcome to Dive Club. My name is Rid, and this is where designers never stop learning. This week's episode is with Dan Marino, who is a longtime designer at Snap. So we get an inside look at what makes their design culture so unique. But another reason why I wanted to have this conversation is Dan recently joined a rocket ship startup called Captions to work on AI-powered video editing. So a big part of this conversation is what it looks like to challenge assumptions as a designer in order to create a truly breakthrough product. So let's start this conversation by learning more about what it takes to design AR experiences at Snapchat.
You always just felt like you were in the future, 5 years, 10 years into the future, and building products, solving problems that weren't problems today, but that you know, based on how people are using Snapchat today, based on how people are interacting with computers today, these problems will be coming about. So it's always sort of like being at that edge. The only real way that you can do that is by working from first principles. So seeing, okay, today people like to communicate with each other. Today people like to be entertained and they like to learn about things and go around in their daily lives, whether it's listening to music, whether it's making plans with friends. So just like very basic human behavior, and then extrapolating to what does a spatial interface look like that can facilitate those things. So for example, Snapchat obviously has a lot of creative tools, and that's actually where we started working on a bridge of, okay, how do we bring those creative tools, which were maybe one of the first things added to Snapchat, like adding a caption, adding a sticker, drawing something, and how do those creative tools map to AR, and not only AR on the phone, but also AR on a wearable. So our whole like initial exploration, at least when I joined the team right out of college, was defining, okay, we're going to do a 3D painting lens experience on spectacles and on the phone. And we're going to do a 3D caption way of like writing a message and having, based on what you're writing, having like hearts or stars or other effects coming up. So it was a direct link between how people were using Snapchat today and how we thought people would use it in the future. And when you're thinking about AR, where you have a live camera feed and an environment all around you, all of the constraints are different because you're not only drawing in 3D, for example, but you're actually moving around your drawing and looking at it from all these other angles. So a whole set of constraints randomly appeared that we had to sort of like take a step back and be like, how do you draw in 3D when you're looking at, like, for example, a phone screen in AR? You can maybe draw something that'll be on some sort of Z level plane, but then you go like around it, you turn 45 degrees and it like now looks super wobbly because based on how you were holding your phone or how you were looking with your spectacles, it would look a certain way. So there's just like all these considerations when you break out of a 2D screen. But at the end of the day, it all sort of came back to like, why would people even want to do this? So we were optimizing for fun, like fun brush styles that felt light, like even though it's super hard to like draw a straight line, we would lean into it by helping you smooth out the curves. And all of these were done with prototypes in Lens Studio. So I was a designer, but I also had to be an engineer. I had to learn 3D modeling. I had to learn like how to write shaders. And I think, yeah, the only way to prototype in AR and design in AR is you have to be able to work in this multidimensional thing. Someday someone will invent an amazing like spatial design tool. But since that doesn't exist, like you have to wear all these hats, and you can't really just be labeled as an engineer or as an interaction designer or as a UX designer or visual graphic designer, because you have to think about how all of these sort of factors affect the end experience of actually being in an AR experience.
So I've been using this new product to do research called Genway. It uses AI-powered interviewers to help you gather qualitative data at basically an infinite scale. So I've actually been interviewing listeners of this show all over the world. I tell the AI what I'm hoping to learn, and then it has a dynamic conversation with each person. Genway then organizes all of the key insights for me automatically. So I learned more in a 2-week study than I had in a year and a half prior. Needless to say, I am totally hooked. And if you want to take your research to the next level, head to dive.club/Genway to get 2 months free. That's Genway. So if you didn't hear, Framer just had a banger of a release with their all new plugin marketplace. It's a pretty big deal, so here are a few of my favorites. First, Framer Auth makes it super easy to add login experiences and gated content. There's another one for syncing all of your Figma styles. You can now hook Notion up to your CMS, generate style guides in a single click, and so much more. So head to dive.club/plugins to check out the all new Framer marketplace. Can you share a little bit of context about your engineering background and then maybe like how that actually showed up in the way that you were contributing on the AR team?
Absolutely. So yeah, I went to college for engineering. So I actually started out fully as an engineer and I was looking for internships. I ended up interning at Facebook or Meta, I guess now, and basically got randomly placed on this team called AI Demos, which was, looking back, probably the most important decision or like random chance that I got put on this team, because it was basically this like little demos team that was being set up around all these acquisitions that Facebook had done. So they had acquired Masquerade, which is like a face filter sort of like engine that they had bought, and then a bunch of other companies as they were building out their applied ML and their AI research labs, where they would basically be like, hey, there's some really cool technology. Like we can detect surfaces, we can detect faces, we can detect facial expressions. What do we do with this? So as an intern, I was using my iOS skills that I were very, very nascent at the time, I would say, to then be like, oh, it'd be so cool if we, I don't know, built an engine where you would smile and it would change to like a happy filter, then you would be angry, it would change to a different filter. Or what if you started building like a little assistant bot that would like look at you and reflect your facial expressions back at you? So a lot of that was more like, oh, I just had like a fun idea. And I'd be like, okay, I can code it. But then I actually spent most of the time designing it in Sketch, in Figma, when I wasn't a designer, but I was like, so much of this is visual. You are designing so much of the interface at the same time as you're building it. So you don't have like UI kits, you don't have components that you can like sort of build out. You kind of have to do everything from scratch. So I realized that the design part was the part that I enjoyed the most, because I felt like I could move much faster. I think those things have now changed, as you can sort of move much faster in code now with AI tools. But when I would hand it over to people to try the prototypes, I realized that I would just see all the bumps that they would encounter on the design side. And I was like, oh, I just want to be a better designer. And the fact that this was like such a new field, like AR, made that like there was no right way of doing things. So like, it was very much an exploration. Like that's like literally called it the AR exploration team later on at SAP. There's just no right or wrong way to do it. And that's like the most liberating thing as a designer. So just a lot of fun exploration until you sort of found the rhythm of like things that made sense. And then while I was at Facebook during this internship, it was right about the time that Instagram was launching stories, Facebook was launching stories. And all of this to me was like, okay, a lot of the innovation that's going on here is borrowing from a place, and in this case it was Snapchat, where a lot of the innovations seem to be going on over there in LA. So I remember being in the Bay Area over the summer and being like, I need to do whatever it takes to get to Snap. And so I went to this big intern event where the San Francisco Giants play in like the baseball stadium. It was like Internapalooza, I think. And I just like literally beelined to the Snapchat booth and basically like, hey, I worked in AR this summer. I wanted like go help you guys out. And basically one thing led to another, and I ended up meeting this guy, Andrew McPhee, who was my sort of first manager, both in my internship and then full-time. And he was like purely a designer. His company had just gotten acquired by Snap, and they were integrating a lot of their foundational AR stuff. And they all sort of started working together as kind of like this design, engineer, prototyping team that just had like some of the most talented people I ever worked with. And they were like a real ragtag group of video game designers, like musicians, 3D artists, like animators, people who had worked in big tech backend, but also like, I don't know, random people who would skate at lunch in the Venice skate park. And it was just this like, I was just learning from everybody. And I guess I felt like, oh, wait, what am I bringing to the table? And I think it ended up being, I was just somebody who wasn't necessarily an engineer, wasn't necessarily a designer, but could help debug something on the engineering side, had some crazy ideas of how we could work on something, a fresh take on design, and then go ahead and on my own, go from Figma to a prototyping tool like ProtoPie or something like that, and then actually sketch it out in our AR tool, which is called Lens Studio. So I could just sort of like own these little cycles. And because everything is set up in AR, is set up like as a real-time like rendering engine, you're basically defining little video games. Like it's like you're defining with scripts, you're building out whole end-to-end experiences. So the iteration loop, like you don't have to build the app, you don't have to push it to your phone, and you have to get it approved by Apple. Like you basically are running any sort of AR experience within Snapchat. So you're able to do basically design and build at the speed of coding, at the speed of like your mind. I think my biggest takeaway was also that when you're designing for something that's sort of always 5 years away, and like 5 years can buy, and even like today, I mean, earlier this week or a couple of weeks ago, both Facebook and Snap sort of announced their new version of their AR headsets, but like you still can't buy them. You still can't go out to the store and get them. And the ones that you can, like the Vision Pro, like you still find that people are like, okay, this is amazing technology. Is it technology for like solving a problem that doesn't exist? Like right now it probably is. But I mean, I think the fact that every single smart person running these companies is like, yeah, AR is the next platform says a lot. But the whole point of this exploration team was like, what is that bridge? Like, how do we bridge the way we use computing today and the way that we use computer tomorrow?
Something that I've always been curious about is like the roadmap at a company like Snap, specifically within AR, because like you said, like it always feels 5 years away. Not only that, but it's not like you're working backward from clear, you know, user problems and quote unquote customer needs. The roadmap's like derived from like more opportunities, but also just like what is fun. So how do you even know what to work on in an environment like that?
A lot of acquisitions happened right at the time. It was like the 2016, I would say. So like all of a sudden Snap had all these like companies. There was like one was like, okay, this company did like face filters. This other one was like a headset company, and they had like a waveguide projector. And so it was just, how do we put these things together in a cohesive camera platform? So the whole team was called Camera Platform. And it started with like, okay, the face filter app that got integrated, they saw like there was like an immediate potential. Okay, so like today we can integrate face filters into Snapchat, and like that completely changed the app. It became such a fun, easy, like you see it, you hand it to your mom, you hand it to your grandma, they turn into like, I don't know, a wolf or a puppy, and you're like, oh my God, this is amazing. So it starts from there, like that's the seed. And then it's like, okay, well, we need to build a tool for you to act, for anybody to actually both internally and then externally to like build these AR experiences. So that was how like Lens Studio came about. And then it was a matter of, okay, well, we were doing face stuff pretty well. What if like you pointed at the sky and all of a sudden you can change the way the sky looks? So it was basically adding capability by capability. And like, so you have like a whole research track of like new ML stuff. And then whenever you have certain wins, the Snap research team would have to be like, okay, we have a way to do hands now. But it's like, okay, it'll take this many seconds to render a frame of hand tracking, and we need to get that to real time. So it was like the actual technical constraint of how do you minimize these models so they run in real time on a phone and on a headset. So it was like basically all the tracks were set out like years in advance. Like they knew they wanted to do world AR. They knew they wanted to do face, human body, all sorts of things. And it was literally like, there's just milestones of, okay, we can get it in this next 6 months, we can get it to run this much faster. And then as a designer, you'd be like, oh, all of a sudden they added music to Lens Studio where you can like detect beats and react to them. Or it'd be like, oh, you can detect surfaces and faces and dogs, or you can like scan a plant and it'll tell you about it. It's like always a function of, we have this technological capability, we're trying to solve this user need, and the timing has to be right for both of those to create something that's brand new, that's going to be actually like impactful on a 10x level to whoever is like playing around with that technology.
Okay, so at some point you make the switch to the traditional product design team. What was that like?
I had been working on AR for 3 or 4 years at that point, and I was looking at, okay, what have we actually shipped to the world? And at the time, the list was pretty small. Like I had a lot of patents, which is crazy. And I was able to get a lot of patents, and that it was amazing because then I got my green card from that. But I was looking at the actual, okay, like where is the dent that I've left on the world? And all of the things that I was looking at that I was proud of having worked on, the world maybe wasn't even going to see until 5 years later, maybe ever at all. So it became clear to me that it was a combination of, I wanted to have much more immediate impact, and that I thought that at Snap, the way to do that was to join the product design team. And then specifically, I was just very interested in the messaging team, which was just like the chat in Snapchat. So what a lot of people don't know is that like at Snap, the design team is only like 10 or 12 people for the entire company. And it's probably a company of a couple thousand, maybe like 4,000. And what that means is that like each individual designer has just like so much responsibility and it's a lot of trust from Evan to go and own that area and work with the other designers, work with PMs, engineering directors, like all sorts of people to sort of keep the app growing, both in terms of usage, but obviously in terms of like fun and value. So I was like, okay, the one I care the most about messaging because I love messaging apps. I'm a huge fan of Snapchat, the way like they reinvented so many core assumptions. And at the end of the day, like I like to say that Snapchat is like the best analogy for human conversation. I mean, like this, what we're doing right now, recording this podcast, it's like most conversations that you have with people are not recorded. Yet basically every single messaging app that's ever existed sort of like saves all of your chat history by default. And it's literally like a philosophy. Snap is like, hey, you save the moments that matter to you, both visual moments or like messages sent between friends. And so that just to me felt like an exciting place to like, why don't we keep pushing all this thinking? But at the same time, bring Snapchat's chat interface, which hadn't evolved ever since like that sort of like original version, up until competing with WhatsApp, competing with Messenger in terms of like their capabilities, how you can customize it. Because at the end of the day, if Snapchat was to win in like the messaging space, it had to feel first incredibly fast. Like speed has always been like the core of the messaging team, both technically and design wise. And then also it has to feel like human. It has to feel like as unique as the conversations that you have within it. And it just kind of created this opportunity where I was like, hey, I think I know enough about design to be like a product designer. But until then I had been an engineer, a spatial designer, design engineer, like all these other titles, but it then like was the opportunity for me to become a product designer.
Not bad for your first official product design role. I'd like to hear you talk a little bit more about the competitor piece even, because I think it would have been really easy to just start copying features. Because in many ways, chat as a product surface area has kind of been commoditized. So how did you figure out what like the Snapchat way of messaging should be as you're kind of pulling it into the future?
Yeah, I think a lot of that came from like looking around and seeing how like kids and like teenagers were using Snapchat as their main messaging app. And like we'd hear stories. It's like, oh, people kept asking to increase the group size because they were trying to have like groups of 100 people in a snap, like in a chat thread on Snapchat talking about like, I don't know, a sorority or like a group in college. And like, I was just thinking, like trying to wrap my head around, like there are so many better messaging platforms to do this on. Like, why are you defaulting to Snapchat? And I think the key learning there was like, that's what all their friends were using. That's what they were using for one-on-one communication, both visual and like text communication. So it was just like, they just were demanding more from the chat apps that like were out there. So I saw it as a huge opportunity to be like, hey, let's lean into the things that make Snapchat, like chatting on Snapchat, unique, while also realizing that, hey, there are things that we need to be much better at supporting. And voice notes was like one of the first projects that I decided to take on, because literally the voice notes on Snapchat hadn't been updated since they were first introduced. And so I came up and I'm like, hey, I'm from Latin America, I'm from Colombia. Voice notes like run basically the whole economy in Colombia. Like people just send each other voice notes on WhatsApp back and forth. So like I was thinking, okay, we can redesign these voice notes. And we did a lot of user research and people were very frustrated with like very basic things. Like you couldn't scrub on them on Snapchat. Once you hit play, you couldn't like actually, like if you hit stop, it would stop all the way back to the beginning. You couldn't like play and pause and continue to record them. You had to like keep your finger on the button. And the second you let go, it would send. Like there was no way to review it. And a lot of those decisions made sense at the time when they were introduced, because it was like the fastest way to do it. And you just didn't really have to worry and think about it. But I was like, okay, all these other apps have figured out voice memos, voice notes, but Snapchat, like the usage isn't that high. So I decided, okay, let's put together a proposal. And I think the key thing that I wanted to really push on was transcription. So it's like, I really wanted you to like record a voice note. And then when you let go and send it, you could actually read it. Because I think that voice notes are, I call it like the most selfish way of communicating. Because when you start recording, it's incredibly easy to send one. But then like when you're actually trying to play it back, you have to be in the right place. If you don't have your headphones on, you have to get your headphones. If you're on the go, you're like trying to do other things. It really demands your full attention. So my thinking was, what if we just like added transcription to voice notes? And like, as far as I knew, like that wasn't very popular. Now it is, like, because we launched that a couple of years ago and all these other apps also sort of were like had that same intuition. Now even iMessage has transcription. But at the time I was like, wait, that's actually a great way to level the playing field and keep with the ethos of Snap of like, speed is at the core of communication. So that was sort of like my first project. And I designed that, showed it to Evan. And I think like a lot of people maybe don't know, but like the way that the design team at Snap works is like basically every week you are asked to come with like two or three new ideas that you're showing to Evan. And at the beginning it's incredibly daunting. Like literally on your first day on the team, you have to present a new idea. Like even if you don't have something ready. And I think that just sets the bar for like the expectation that you're always creating. And not like when I say new ideas, a lot of them are like novel new products, but a lot of them are just like cleaning up design debt, cleaning up like experiences that like, or addressing opportunities that come up. But it is the expectation that net new product is like you're designing features and presenting them and getting them approved and then working with PMs like on a weekly basis. So I think like one thing that I learned a lot from that was just like not holding on to designs too much. Like, cause you would spend a lot of time working on something, Evan would be like, ah, no, this sucks. Let's work on something else. And just like being like, okay, next week I'm going to come back with two or three ideas that are going to like keep raising the bar.
I mean, that's a lot of ideas in circulation. So what did you learn about getting Evan and the team excited about investing in your idea? Maybe like the voice notes as an example.
Yeah, I think there a lot of it was specifically for the voice notes product. I did end up always coming back to my own experience. I was like, hey, I want to send voice notes to my mom, or like my mom loves sending me voice notes, but I hate listening to them. It was like this very common problem. And being like, when I'm recording a voice note on Snapchat, if you like move your finger like by a millimeter, it like triggers the sending of it. So it's like there was no room for user error because that's the way it was coded. So just like providing a lot of actual visual examples of like, hey, these are all the voice notes my mom sent me in a day on WhatsApp. And like, I would love to do this on Snapchat. Showing like physically somebody accidentally like letting their finger go and sending a voice message before it was fully recorded. For most of the presentations that I would do like my own personal experience or with the problem. How does that sort of map to a broader, like, do we have a user sentiment on it? Do we have a number that we can quantify, like how many voice notes we could be sending if we fix this? And then like just a bunch of solutions with different directions. I would usually boil it down to two or three. So it was very easy to do like, do this one, or do this other one. But it was like kind of a formula that I sort of kept perfecting. And I think I got to the point where I was doing these like crazy slides where it was just like one word on the screen. But then I would be able to like have like a video playing in the background that sort of like augmented it or my voiceover. And it was just a lot of fun. I think like once you got into the swing of it, it was just the best way of learning how to tell stories about products, stories about opportunities, and why something that like you'd be like, oh yeah, transcription and voice notes, like, ah, maybe we'll add it to the roadmap, like we'll work on it in a year. It's just like how good of a pitch you're able to make to the design team and to Evan and to the engineering team would make the difference as to whether or not they would start working on it next week, which was fun. And then, yeah, the other thing I would say there is that like the Snap team, the design team had such a interesting mix of people where I think there was like a spectrum of people who, and I think most designers are somewhere on the spectrum where they're like, on one end, you have like people who are artists and they like literally craft and like they have to be doing stuff that's new. Working on stuff that has already been done before is extremely boring. And they're like amazing at it. And they have people at Snap who are literally just like, every 2 weeks, something that like they literally, you have no idea where they pulled it out because it would literally be a new insight, a new way of approaching things, a new way of doing like a camera recording animation that you'd be like, yeah, like how the hell would you like get there? And then there were people on the completely opposite end of the spectrum where all their presentations were just like charts. And it was like, hey, we have in this country, this is going down and it's because X, Y, and Z, like everything had a reason behind it. And both of those people or types of people were successful at getting their ideas across. I think people would just play to their strengths. And I think I would fall somewhere in the middle where I think I would try to be like very pragmatic, would like use identifying problems, sort of working back from first principles, like what are people actually trying to do? And then that's where the creativity came in and be like, okay, we have maybe these constraints that we don't want to change things too much in this surface. But if we were to just try to find one or two things to tweak within like the messaging surface, we'd be able to get a lot of the value. So it was just fun seeing like just the variety and like learning from both sides, like from the super artistic people, like this guy, Laurent, who's amazing, just like learning how to think so much outside the box. Like half the times I'd be talking to him, it's like, what if we move this button here? Or maybe it could go on this side. And then he'd just be like, what if there was just no button? And then you just skip the whole problem altogether and just being like, oh my God, yeah, that is the right solution in this case. And then from other people, like there's this guy, Nathan, who I worked with a lot, who he would just like send me all these test results and be like, hey, we tried this. It didn't work in the past. And this was our hypothesis. It's just like much more like experimental and like scientific design while also being able to keep things fun and lightweight. So I don't know, I feel like I just, it was an amazing education. And then it helped me bring those two sides together to then make sure that my ideas were sort of treated with the right amount of respect and were taken seriously, because I was able to hopefully communicate both sides of the craft and also the impact.
Let's talk a little bit more about some of your ideas for messaging then, because you're kind of showing up with like the fresh perspective in a lot of ways. So were there ways that you were challenging some of the core product assumptions as a designer?
There were a couple of insights that kept sort of rearing their heads, both in the messaging side and just generally at Snapchat. First one was like that, like 80% of your communication went to like one person. In my case, it's like my girlfriend. For a lot of people, it's their best friend or their sibling. And I think like literally the whole app is designed, there's like a section of your best friends, then within there, that's like that one top best friend. And so we like lean a lot into how do we make your conversation with your best friend feel even more special? And we were thinking about it from like, okay, you can have unlocks like unique Bitmoji poses with your best friend, or you can like certain creative tools or certain camera modes that you could only use with your best friends. And I think one of the things that I kept pushing on is like one of the core tenets of Snapchat is that like the pictures and the chats that you send get deleted. Chats usually get sent immediately or get deleted immediately after their view. And then chats now hang around for like 24 hours. Before, they used to also just delete immediately after you viewed them. And I think like an insight that I have is that works for most conversations you have. That works for people that you have like a medium to even high, like sort of tied relationship. Like it's like people who are your friends, maybe even close friends, but also people who are more acquaintances. They'd be like, you don't want to like store every single thing that's been said. That gives you a little bit more freedom and flexibility to be genuine, be authentic. But I think my insight or a question that I found super interesting is like, for that one person, like in my case, my girlfriend, like I actually want to see all the pictures of her. And like, I care, like all of them, even the ones that are like super throwaway, I want to save all of those. So I started sort of pushing on this idea of, does Snapchat stop being Snapchat if you make it permanently save photos and messages from the right people? And I think I was able to sort of make that pitch. And I think like some of that has already been implemented. Some of that maybe still in the works. Maybe they went back on it. But I think like for me, a lot of the questions were, okay, let's take this analogy of Snapchat is a mirror of human communication, where for some people, you don't care about saving everything, but there are certain people that not all conversations are made equal. So that was one of the ideas that I had that I was very happy that I was able to explore. Another one that comes to mind is this like project we did. It was just like chat wallpapers. And I think like you go to many chat apps and you're basically like, okay, if you have any customization, it's like, all right, you pick from one of 12 colors, or you pick a theme based on like the weather or the season. And then you have these other ones where it's like, I want to make my chat app the way I want to. So I set a wallpaper, but only I can see it. And then when we were coming up with how do we do chat wallpapers on Snapchat, it was obvious to me that like the wallpaper needs to be set for both people. That's like me changing the wallpaper of a conversation is actually a form of communication. And we need to make it extremely easy to figure out what that wallpaper is. So like if you send me a snap, I can open it, save it, press and hold on it, and be like, make this the wallpaper. So like you would enter conversations with like people and all of a sudden the wallpaper would change and it'd be like them like laughing at you, or like, I don't know, them like sticking their tongue out because you had said, or you sticking your tongue out at them because they saved that and made that the wallpaper. So it just like created this like new avenue to make conversations feel fresh. That meant that like we had to redesign Snapchat was one of the only apps that didn't have chat bubbles. It was just like sort of like text on a white background. So like, okay, if you have a background, then you need to be able to read the text. So we had to come up with all these bubbles, and it just became this whole design system of chat, which was like extremely annoying. And the engineers were like, why are we doing it? But at the end of the day, I was like, no, these wallpapers like actually mean a lot to people. And it actually became like one of the first features we launched of Snapchat Plus, which was like a subscription service with, and it was one of the most retentive Snapchat Plus features that then ended up sort of evolving. Then we added like generative AI wallpapers, and then like it all became like, okay, yeah, this is now a whole product with a roadmap. But it just came from this intuition of like, how do we make conversations on Snapchat feel as unique as the conversations that you're having?
So eventually you decide to leave Snap after like 6 years and become one of the very first designers at this hot startup called Captions, where you're working on kind of related creative tools, AI powered video editing. So can you give us a little bit of context as to what that new role has been like so far?
Absolutely. So Yeah, it was coming up on 5 years at Snap, and I decided this was the only place I'd ever worked at. I hadn't moved from LA to New York, and I was working mostly with the team that was in LA. The design team mostly is in LA, so I just felt like it was sort of a natural time to make a change. And luckily, I reconnected with Gaurav, who is the CEO of Captions, and he actually was also on the design team at Snap. So I had known him kind of briefly through there, and I really didn't know too much about what they were doing, but I knew that that things were going well. I knew that they were like an AI startup in New York that has product market fit, and that's like kind of hard to find. So it was like very casually just like, hey, come by the office. We'll show you what we're working on. And then like maybe something will happen. So I came to the office, just chatted with Gaurav, and he like laid out this picture of the company, which was like, the premise is extremely simple. It's like, video is becoming increasingly commoditized. Like if you're any business right now and you're not creating video content, you might as well be dead online. Like people are moving away from having like a static web page as being like the first introduction to your brand or your business. And they're more so like flocking to what is your presence on TikTok. Like they'll get videos recommended to their feeds about your business. And so that being this like accelerant towards video means that like the tools need to grow to like support those people. Like I have a degree in engineering. I have like now 5-6 years in design. And if you ask me to edit like a bunch of videos, to record, edit, and launch videos, like, I mean, that's why I think Rid, you're a hero. It's like a completely different set of skills. A completely huge time suck. And like, not only that, but you can spend hours on it. And then the result is like pretty shitty. So the opportunity is, how do we make video editing, video generation, and like just running a business online with video much easier? And so when I joined as like the fourth designer, and then basically ended up being two designers for a while. But it's just been like a really interesting journey, because like when I joined the company, all we had was this app that was like a video editing app. So you would have to start with like, you upload your video and then you could do a lot of fun stuff with it. So for example, if you're not looking at the camera in your video, it'll fix your eyes so that you're looking at the camera. It obviously adds captions. I mean, that's in the name, and there's a ton of like styles for it. But then it'll do some like interesting stuff where like you hit a button and then automatically will find places based on the script where it thinks that zooming in is a good option. So it'll add automatic zooms to your project. It'll add like noise reduction. It'll like trim spaces where you're like have silences or where there's like noise. So all these like things that like, yes, you could do manually with any sort of video tool, but we're just saving you time. So I was like, okay, this is awesome. The only bet here is that people are going to be creating more video tomorrow than they are today. And it's a pretty like simple editing app. I think there's a lot of ways that you can grow it. You can launch it on web. You can launch it on multiple platforms. And then like a couple weeks into the job, basically Gaurav says like, hey, we're going to continue working on all these AI tools, but we're also going to take this like crazy swing and do like avatars, like do like AI generated people so that you don't actually even need to record a video anymore. And like that to me felt crazy to be like, okay, we've basically solved video editing. Like we have all these tools. But what if we just like didn't have to edit videos at all, or like record the videos at all? And that to me was like so compelling. And I also was like, this is going to take forever. And I was like, luckily in a year or 2 years, based on my experience at Snap, like we'll have figured out. So I'm like, okay, yeah, we'll add avatars. We'll do all this stuff, but like no shot that we end up doing. And like literally 4 months later, maybe 3 months later, we launched our first like AI avatar product and a bunch of other like AI editing tools around that. And like variations of like, oh, what if you have two avatars? What if you can clone yourself by just recording 1 minute of video? So that's when I realized like, holy shit, like this is a very unique type of place where not only do we say things and then like do them extremely quickly, but the actual level of intentionality with what we're picking to work on literally determines like the next couple months work and like the impact and like how like our competitors react. Cause we have like literally a lot of competitors that are looking at our every move in order to figure out what they work on next. And like the way we've just been able to innovate is, yeah, working back from first principles.
What is it about the design culture or process that you think enables this level of velocity?
When you are a designer at a place like Captions and you know that you have the backing of, it's a small engineering team by all means, but they're phenomenally great. You just feel like you're like anything that you put on screen will end up being shipped in like 2 weeks. It's just like, it feels like magic. You're like, okay, I designed this flow, handing it off, and then we're launching it. So I think that gives you a lot of confidence. It's like, but then it's a matter of picking the right things to design on. And a lot of the times it's pretty scary because you're like, oh yeah, we have a lot of ideas of blowing up our editor and starting from scratch and introducing a new editor that's much simpler, that has like all the learnings, but there's a big chance that like it'll fail. And if that fails and we spend like 3 months working on it, even though we move quickly, something like that of that magnitude will take a couple months, then like we're kind of messed up. So it's just like being very mindful of what it is that we're working on. And a lot of it comes from Gaurav. He just like sees, he has an exceptional like sense of the product and the opportunities that are coming way before anyone else does. And I think that in that sense, he's just very similar to like Evan, for example, who's like able to like question things from first principles and just be right more often than he is wrong in terms of these big bets that people are like, oh yeah, there's no way that you guys are actually going to do it. And then we go about and doing them. So it's the way that we operate is that he sort of comes to us with rough ideas like, oh, we should really add this feature, or we should really explore this workflow. And then like, we sort of go out as designers and start thinking, okay, do we have anything in the existing editor that we could like introduce this in and massage it? And a lot of like AI tools right now, especially generative video tools, are like just a bunch of forms that you go like, okay, you put a prompt in and then you get a script maybe, and then you get a result and then you're able to edit it. And I think we're really trying to also on that side of the house innovate. Do we just have to show you a bunch of loading screens all the time when you're jumping from step one to step two, or can we make things fun? Can we show, not tell? And like, that's like, I think any designer in AI that you talk to right now, they're one of their main things is like, how do we innovate on like even just showing, like going beyond the text input field? And I think that's something that we're tackling both at the sort of video generation side and then the video editing side. But it all comes from these opportunities that Gaurav and then ourselves are figuring out and then finding the technologies to solve those things too.
I want to hear a little bit more about just the difference between working at a big company like Snap and, you know, the startup like Captions. How has this environmental change and the fact that you're only like one of two designers for a bulk of this past year, like how has that impacted the way that you approach your practice and show up on a daily basis as a designer?
It has forced me to not rely on other people as much. I think when I was at Snap, it was, even though there were not that many designers, it was still easy to like, I don't know, shift blame in a sense, or be like, oh, this was engineering's fault. I don't know, like this is not my responsibility, just because you have a bigger surface of people to like spread responsibility out. There's just a lot also more people who are physically in the room that would be like, oh, I want to help out. Or it was just like easy to hand things off and sort of assume that like, okay, I have a design and I spec'd it out and it's like a little bit rough around the edges, but I'm going to hand it to this PM and that PM is amazing at it. And they'll go off and make sure that all these things, like, so I can sleep well at night and go wake up the next morning and design something else. Like, I trust them. Whereas at Captions, when it's just me as a designer and then an engineer and we're both working on it, it's like either they have the answers or I have the answers. So, and if we disagree, it's like, okay, let's figure this out. So it's a lot more of like direct feedback loop from design to engineering and back and product and whatever. Like, we don't have any PMs, we're hiring. But it has been much more wearing a bunch of hats, wearing the hat of the designer, wearing the hat of the design engineer. If there are some ideas that I want to directly, I don't know, code in the app, whether it's the web app or the iOS app, like, and that's something that's pretty freeing from like a place, like if you wanted to push a PR to the Snapchat iOS app, there's like a million different hoops that you have to jump through so you don't break the thing. Whereas at Captions, it's like, oh, someone just gave me GitHub access. I can just like make a change that I want. And like, and I do that stuff for like the simple things where it's like, oh, I don't like the color, or like, let's update the app icon, or there are all the like little annoyances that I'm like, I know that it would cost more money and more time if the engineers that are working on something else would change and work on that. So like, whereas Snap, I would like make a ticket, and because the designer tickets were like, oh, high priority, I knew it was going to get solved. Here, it's like, I'm either fixing it myself, or when it really makes sense, I'll work with an engineer. But I think it just let me be a little bit more free in terms of figuring out stuff by myself, learning from engineers more directly without sort of like the layers of, I mean, bureaucracy is the wrong term, but it's like the layers of separation that you have at bigger tech companies where there's just like naturally separation from the people designing the product and the people actually building the product.
I think that's like my favorite role in all of tech is being the designer where you're expected to figure things out quickly, things are going out the door quickly. But then also you're empowered to just jump into the code and just fix things. Like if you don't like how something feels, you just fix it and kind of tinker and kind of sand the UI over time.
The good news is that I don't have to do it that much because the engineers that we have are very product minded and they care. They care. And it's like right now we're at the size where I look around their office and like every single person I see, I know what they're working on. And that I could never say that at Snap just by virtue of the amount of people and like they had multiple offices here. It's like everybody's in the same room. I can see everybody, like we're in meetings like every day together, because a lot of the other differences between a place like Snap and Captions is that at Snap, you maybe have 10 different teams, all with like different interpretations of what the main goal is. Like the vision is, okay, we're going to grow Snapchat in all these countries and we're going to continue to innovate and we're going to add all these features. But it's like, there's like 10 different interpretations of that message. Whereas at Captions, it's like one message and everybody's going to the same beat, to the beat of the same drum. And I think what that empowers designers is to help G craft that message with the right visuals, the right products.
Hey, it's Rid. I'm constantly asked about my favorite products, so I'm gonna take just 1 minute and give you a quick rundown of my stack. Desen is how I ship design changes without having to code. Framer is how I build my websites. Genway is how I do research. Jitter is how I animate my designs. And Play is how I design and prototype mobile apps. Visual Electric is how I generate all of my imagery, and Raycast is my shortcut every step of the way. Now, I've hand selected these companies to partner with me so that I can do these episodes full time. So the best way by far to support the show is to check them out. You can find the full list at dive.club/partners. Okay, now on to the rest of the episode. I want to talk in more specifics about the Captions product. Because I think it's super interesting that like you're still working in creative tools in many ways, but like the fundamental goal of the product is so different. Because with Snapchat, like the goal is to keep you on the app, whereas Captions, everything you're doing is about saving time. So how does that difference show up in the way that you're designing the actual interface?
Right. I think it shows up in both like big picture ways and then little picture ways. I think in the very like microscopic ways, it's like we literally look at all of our funnels and we see like, okay, there's a drop off. Cause like this is just like what you learn. It's like, okay, if you have a flow that takes 7 screens, you're going to lose more people than if the flow takes 4 screens. Even if you like split up the information, and there's an art and a science to like how you lay things out. But generally I've found that like any step that you add, you have to really be questioning like, why are we adding this? And even like in the onboarding, we're like, oh yeah, we ask you for your name just because we can then use it in like the profile section. It's like, do we need to ask you for your name? Like little things. That's like, if the purpose is to save people time every single time they hit a new screen or a loading spinner that takes longer than it should be, is a problem. So like designing in a way that you're optimizing to remove all that. So the speed at which you get the videos that you're here for is like the biggest thing. And then there's like other little things that come with that. For a while while you were generating one of these AI creator like avatar videos, we would just show you like basically an infinite loading spinner. I don't know how long this is going to take, it's roughly like 5 minutes, let's say, but it just feels so much longer than that when we just show you an infinite spinner. And I came to engineers like, do we have any notion of progress? And they're like, well, yeah, there's like the right way of doing it, and then we could fake it and just have a number going up. And I was like, no, like let's do it the right way. And we literally just went from having an infinite spinner to like actually showing you progress, and that had like a huge impact on people canceling their projects. And it's like nothing fundamentally changed, but what we did was just do a better job of communicating to people like, hey, we got you. It's gonna take this off. So it's like the very small thing, like just because everything that we're optimizing for is saving people time. Anytime that we design with a flow that takes time, just being extremely mindful of, hey, does this even need to be here? And if it does, how do we make it clear that Captions is thinking, it's generating, it's doing this stuff, and roughly how long it'll take. And then I think big picture, it's like we're now at the point of looking at entire teams. So it's like a whole marketing team, for example, makes hundreds of ads every month for a big brand, a small brand, and what are their bottlenecks? Like what takes the most time for them to do? Like, I mean, I have never worked in a marketing team, but I know a ton now about how we create ad sets and all the hooks and the importance of testing and A/B testing ads. So that now we're like, I don't know. I just feel like this short insight of, okay, what do people who are making video, for example, a marketing team, what are their biggest time bottlenecks? It requires you to really understand, okay, with each step of the process and their workflow, how can Captions come in and make things much smoother. And so obviously you can be like, well, adding captions takes a certain amount of minutes. If you use like Premiere, if you use captions, it takes one tap. Adding all these like animations take this much, and then you just do one tap. Translating videos, dubbing, like all these things are like vectors that add more and more complexity to the video creating process. And we're just like abstracting them out to like literally tapping a button, and then you get what you want.
Listening to you talk about video editing, it's hard for me to detach from the picture I have in my head of like what video editing software looks like. You know, like there's that timeline that we're just like so accustomed to. How as a designer do you ensure that you're like really taking a step back from existing software and, you know, thinking outside the box and giving yourself the ability to really, again, going back to like challenging some of these assumptions that we've been so comfortable with over the years?
I read this essay once. It was called like Creative Tools for Non-Creators. It's by this guy, Max Kreminsky, and it's like kind of like from the video game researchy side of things. And his whole idea for this essay, which I recommend everybody to read, is like, how do you design a creative tool for people who think that they're not creative? And that has a bunch of challenges and a bunch of like interesting things. And he says that like a good way of going about it is like, first, you don't call it a creative tool. Like, for example, the 3D painting thing that I was talking about at Snap, if you call it 3D painting, people who are like, oh, I'm not a 3D modeler, I'm not a 3D artist, like even like how you name the product and you name the tool itself affects how people look at it. Then the other thing is like you just add a bunch of creative constraints so that like people, instead of being bombarded with like a timeline and a bunch of tracks that they feel like they need to fill in, they just like have like one or a couple buttons, because like the decision paralysis kicks in when you don't have domain expertise over what you're working on. So just like literally limiting the set of things that you can do. And people who are video editors will probably look at our app and be like, oh, they're missing like so many core features that like I could never use this. But like, that's not who we're building for. And I think like having that very clearly as you're designing like the evolution of these tools is the most important thing. And I think the last thing about creating tools for non-creative people is, yeah, make it so that you can blame the tool, not the person. Because the second that you feel that you're incompetent when using it is the second that you decide never to use it again. So handling errors gracefully, letting you retry, like making it very easy to see a bunch of variations. Cause like sometimes people aren't the best at saying like, I know exactly what I want, but if you give them three or four options, they're like, oh, I like this one better than that one. So like making it so that the tool is doing a lot of the heavy lifting in terms of the editing. And then you as the sort of creative director, all you have to do is make choices like, oh, I want a picture here, or I want to swap this out. So it's like, yeah, I think when you're designing creative tools for non-creative people, I think the core is work with those constraints so that people can blame your tool when things are not going the right way. And when things are going the right way, they just feel like they're now like an expert in video editing. We're taking these sort of assumptions and applying them to our entire app. And we're thinking like, what does a future video editor look like? And one of the first challenges that we were like, hey, what if we just made a video editor with no timeline? No time at all. We show each shot that we automatically detect as like a little tappable square. And then you're sort of like going from making your edits in one shot, coming back, going to the other one. But the second that you introduce a timeline, people are like, okay, well, I want to be able to cut a clip. And if you're cutting a clip, then you maybe want to add a transition. And if you're adding a transition, then you want to think about how a shot comes in and the other one comes out. And then you're like, okay, well, those are keyframes in an animation curve, right? And so you need to know about easing. And then it's like, so it's like, the more that you open up the ability for people to edit their videos, the more you're opening the ability for them to mess up their videos. And once you're in a state that you feel like you're in over your head, you've made edits and you can't undo them because some of these are destructive, then you end up with like a mess of timelines. And that's what we're trying to avoid. So The second that you say, wait, if there's no timeline, then yeah, you don't have to worry about splitting clips. You don't have to worry about transitions and keyframes, but we show you presets for shots that you can like with one tap apply and see immediately reflected. And all of a sudden these shots add zooms, they add transitions, they add all the stuff that you don't need to know, but you as a creative director, you can tell, oh, that's the kind of vibe that I want. And that's what like AI can help you do at the current stage.
It's funny listening to you talk about the waterfall effect of the timeline, because I mean, it is an incredibly slippery slope. I mean, like years ago, I actually did a little stint with a startup where I was helping them design a consumer social app. And as a part of that, I was doing a ton of research into TikTok and Instagram's like video editing capabilities. And I was so blown away by like the level of complexity in these like social tools, you know, like you don't even expect it, but it was incredible the amount of controls and features and different ways of editing and things you can add. And honestly, it was like quite overwhelming. So I can see how, yeah, like you're helping people get more comfortable with the tool, but as they get to that level of comfort, do they ask for more capability and more capability? And does that snowball? And I would imagine this battle to preserve simplicity has to be one of the more challenging ones of designing a product like Captions.
Yeah. And not only that, but if you start by giving everybody every single setting, the second you try to remove it, you'll have that one person that is in love with that feature, that is paying for that feature, and then they're very angry and you create like a negative experience. So that's why actually one of our moats, we keep saying internally, like one of our moats is the simplicity. It's very hard. And I learned this at Snap too, the hard way. And like, you look at apps like Instagram and TikTok and all these, and they're so chock full of features that when they're like, let's simplify the app, it's a mess because they're like so reliant on their metrics and things move left and right when you remove buttons, when you change things from one place to another, that for a video editing app like CapCut, like right now, like half the time, if you want to make an edit, you have to look up a YouTube video of like, how do I do X, Y, and Z in CapCut? And like, we just don't want to be in that world where we're sort of overcomplicating things and then having to strip things out. We find it much easier to start simple and really fight to maintain that simplicity. And any additional tool we're adding, any additional lever for control has to like, there's a cost to it. There's a hidden cost that like, yeah, maybe people are really asking for a feature and you give it to them and they're happy for a little bit, but any new user just sees like a bunch of buttons and they're like, I don't know what to do. So it's about balancing that cost of adding new things while also making sure that generally things stay simple.
Before I let you go, I want to take a little bit of like a reflective angle and talk about your individual journey a bit. What's a design skill or like piece of understanding that you've acquired that created an inflection point in your career?
Maybe it's like a silly answer, but it's Figma's prototyping mode completely changed the game for me because I remember when they introduced it at some config thing or whatever, I was like, oh my God, this is the missing piece, because I would be going from, I don't know, Sketch or Figma, and then I would bring things into like Protopie or Origami and stuff. And it's like jumping from tool to tool. And then even like when it wasn't good enough, going into Xcode and actually building things, especially for like camera apps and things like that. It's just like every time you context switch, you lose something. It's like if you import a design from Figma into Protopie, even there's like a plugin, whatever, there's like that one layer that like won't really look the way you wanted it to look. So you just like end up making compromises and spending time redesigning the designs. So for me, I mean, I care a lot about speed. So it's like being able to design and prototype and then push it on a phone, even though the Figma mobile app sometimes gives me a lot of anxiety and pain when it won't load. It never loads exactly when you need it to load when you're about to show somebody important a prototype. But for all of its shortcomings, it is like by far, like I've now started designing with the prototype in mind. And it's like the design and the prototype are one thing in my files. It's like incredibly easy to like design and prototype at the same time. The closer that you are to give something that feels real to somebody, they're more likely to believe it. And whether it's showing an interactive prototype to our CEO or to a partner that we're like trying to pitch them on, I don't know, purchasing captions enterprise stuff, or even like just showing, I don't know, my girlfriend or something like, look what I designed. It's much better if it actually feels like a real thing.
I find that feeling the design as I'm figuring it out helps spark ideas for me even. Like, yeah. I start prototyping with interactive components ridiculously early in my process.
Yeah.
Like, I will literally have like Figma up on my monitor and then I'll have a prototype up on my laptop and I'll be like feeling hover states even though I don't have anywhere. Like, I have a small sliver of the UI like quote unquote figured out, which to some people maybe is insane, but I don't know. There's something about just like actually feeling it as I'm thinking through it that really helps me figure out what that next iteration should look like.
Absolutely. And I think it's like that in combination with, I don't know, like moving quickly, using auto layout and all these things to your benefit. It's like, oh, just wait until the very end to add auto layout. Like, I'm doing like shift A all the time just because that's how I actually am able to move fast. And like I know that something's going to be dragged horizontally. I just like, I'm able to do it really quickly. And there's like a bunch of plugins. Like, I would not have expected me to be such like a shortcut person, but this is one plugin called Papa Component, which may be the thing I use the most every day, which is actually really sick. It's like you'll design something in within a screen and then you want to make it a component. It just like sort of pops it out of there and you can just drag it off screen and then make variants of it. But it's just like this very unique way of working that I think is a mix of my engineering sort of background of being like, how would I actually build it? And then like the animation interest that I have, and then like just the connecting those things with the craft and the visual design that I find compelling, I think is, and then actually being able to code it if none of that like is enough to, like, cause at the end of the day, design is just like selling an idea, whether you're selling it to Evan, the CEO of Snapchat, in a presentation slide presenting about something you want to build, whether it's like just selling yourself, convincing yourself that it's a good idea, or whether it's like you're launching a product that'll get seen by millions of people and you're convincing them that like this is things either going to save them time, save them money, help them communicate with their close friends. It's like, it's all selling. And I think that's, I think also when I realized that a lot of design was selling and telling stories through product. That's when I think a lot of things changed for me.
It's interesting to hear you talk because a lot of people that I have on this show are traditional designers who are moving outside of Figma. Maybe they're like tinkering with like Play or Origami or Code, and you're kind of moving in the opposite direction coming from the engineering background, which then kind of makes me want to ask about how did you sharpen your skills as a visual designer, specifically working at on a product like Snapchat with a really, really high bar? You're working on messaging, which is used by millions of people. Like, that is a pretty high stakes playground to really refine your skill set and like UI design principles. So what was that part of your journey like?
The other best feature in Figma, other than the prototyping, is like you look somebody's name up and then you can click and see what files they've touched recently. And it's like, I'm very shameless about like, everything is a remix, and like literally going like the people that I was looking up to of like their craft of visual design, being able to look at their files and be like, oh, that's weird that they would set it up this way, but then when you zoom out it looks a certain way, or like, oh, okay, it makes sense that they would call out these things. And I think every designer I've worked with, both at Captions and Snap, I tell them like, feel free to rip off all of my ideas, because I know that like you're not just going to show them and be like, I designed, like, it's like we're not in the, that's like, that's not the world we live in. It's usually like, what is the best jumping off point, the best starting off point? And it's like, look at the way we've done things in the past, remix them, reinterpret them, and then come up with something new. So I just did the same thing for visual design, whether that was something I saw on Twitter and I was like trying to replicate it, or working with very talented visual designers at the companies I've been at. Like, I'll see the way they do something and just like learn. And then on top of that, figuring out what is your own like voice that comes into it. And for me, a lot of it is actually the layout of things. It's making sure that the spacing makes sense, making sure that being very intentional with color and components and all these other things. So I think just kind of trial by fire, like seeing when you hand something to somebody who you respect and their visual craft, and they're like, oh, I liked how you did this and this. Just like jotting that down and be like, okay, that was good. And just you do that enough times in conjunction to trying to replicate things or literally seeing, that's the coolest thing. It's like when you're actually on a team with people who are extremely talented, just becoming a sponge and being like, yeah, I didn't go. But again, it's like the best designers I worked on, none of them really went to like design school. None of them are like, maybe would even consider themselves artists per se, but they literally like make works of art in Figma every day. And I just happen to have the access to go in and steal them and like remake them my own. And basically you just do that enough times. And then people start doing that to you. And then people start being like, oh, I liked how you did that. Can you send me the file? I'm like, yeah, take it, run with it, destroy it. Like, and I think that's now that I've started sort of more so mentoring designers that are coming in. It's like the first thing is like, we'll be like, okay, well, add this feature. And then maybe they'll show me something and I'll be like, try to put it on top of everything that was already there. But like, you should feel empowered to break everything. Like, the reason why a button is in a page or on a screen is because it made sense at that time. Does it still make sense? If the answer is no, kill it. Or like, if you like this other button that we have somewhere else in the screen and you're like, why isn't this here? Just put it there. And like, I think that's the way that I like to design. And I think that the culture that I'm trying to build at Captions is like one where it's like three questions. It's like, the first one is like, does it work? Because like, if it doesn't work, if it's not solving the problem that you set out to solve, like, just try something different. But then if it does work, then you're like, is it as simple as it can possibly be? And if the answer is no, just keep simplifying it until you literally can't remove anything else because it wouldn't work anymore. And then once it works and once it's like as simple as you think it'll be, then it's like, are you proud of putting it out into the world? And if you're not doing those in that order, then I think you're leaving something on the table or you're maybe working on the wrong stuff.
All right, last question. You mentioned in passing when we were chatting earlier that you think there's a chance that maybe you would start your own company one day. So what's something that you've picked up either from Evan or Gaurav that you think you might take with you in the future as a design founder?
I think it's founder mode energy that's kind of like becoming pretty viral. It's like once you see it, and it's like, I think I've just been lucky to have been at Snap and Captions where both Evan and G are very much founder mode. Well, like if I were to start my own company, like I would try to be involved in the design as much as possible for the entirety of it. Both Evan and G are extremely busy people, but they make the time to meet with the design team multiple times per week, give feedback, literally being like, hey, this is off. I guess that level of relentless design, I think, is something that I would want to obviously keep. The first couple of times where someone like Evan looks at your designs and tells you they're bad, it's like, it hurts.
Yeah,
but then you come full circle. And then there's like a couple of times when he's like, oh, this is brilliant. This is great. And you just feel like, okay, like if the people at the very top, so to say, like care about the design as much as like I do, I'm just going to be more incentivized to produce better work. But yeah, I think like if I were to do it in the future, I'm lucky to have had just such great examples to follow.
Dan, thank you so much for coming on and giving us some examples of just different things that we can, you know, aspire to emulate from these cultures, and just hearing more about your journey going from engineering to design. Like, there's just so many little nuggets in here, and I really appreciate you taking the time to share them with us today.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I'm a huge fan of the show, so happy to be a part of it now.
Hey, it's Rid. Don't forget, if you want to go even deeper, each week I send an email out to over 10,000 designers with bonus resources and key takeaways from these conversations. So head to dive.club/email to sign up. Okay, I'll see you next week.